Welcome to episode 150 of the Active Photographer Podcast, your behind-the-scenes glimpse into the day-to-day life of a working professional photographer, with me, Giles Babbage. One of the things I love so much about the area of the country that I live in, I'm on the south coast of the UK, is the diversity of outdoor locations I have at my disposal. You know that I love woodland, and I'm also a fan of being down by the sea, but what about hillsides? Well, thankfully, I'm right on the foot of the South Downs National Park, and it's here that I'm taking you in this week's show. Specifically, we're heading to an area called Kingly Vale, or to give it its full name, Kingly Vale National Nature Reserve, where I recently spent some time researching for some forthcoming features. So, welcome, one and all, to The Active Photographer, episode 150. It's just before 4:45 in the afternoon, and I am out and about on the trail. I am walking along a path, having just walked all the way down from the very top of a place called Kingly Vale, which is in West Sussex, here in the UK. And I won't go into all the details about Kingly Vale now. I'll put a link into the show notes, and you can find out for yourself. Basically, the very top of Kingly Vale has some burial mounds, four burial mounds up there, spanning back many, many, many years. And they were just one of the points of reference that I have seen whilst I've been out and about today. Now, the reason for me being out and about is quite simple. A lot of you know that, as well as being a photographer, I am a writer. And of course, the photography and the writing come together when I write feature articles, or even when I write for the Active Photographer website. So I thought I'd do a bit of a research trip today, which hasn't quite gone to plan, I don't mind telling you. Basically, the route that I wanted to take was starting off at the car park on the approach to Kingly Vale, which is at a place called West Stoke. That's where the car park is. And so you follow the path along and you walk all the way up through Kingly Vale. It's really steep, and you get to the top. You've got amazing views across Chichester and sort of all the water and the little inlets and all this sort of thing. Fantastic. And then, of course, to the other side of the mounds there, you've got equally fantastic views over to other areas in that direction. The plan had been to do a 6.5 mile walk today. So I'm travelling fairly light, and I'll explain a bit about my kit in a moment. But it didn't quite go to plan from very first thing this morning. I had thought, after various family things were out the way, I'd just set off early and that would be great. So the first thing that didn't quite go to plan was that I had to stay at home for a bit longer than I was expecting, which was fine. Then I was all set to leave, and by this point it was just before, it was about 11 o'clock. And so I was all set, and then a colleague phoned and asked if I could sort out something for him, help him with a picture that I'd taken that he needed a copy of quite urgently. And he's a good mate, so I said, yeah, okay, I'll do that. So by the time I did that, and then I was going to grab some food on the way out, because I didn't have the chance, or rather didn't make the time or find the time to do it any sooner, that would have been okay and I could have been off on my way. So by the time I actually got going, the morning had gone. And so the long and short of it is I haven't completed my route today. What I have done is taken some photographs along the route leading up to the top of Kingly Vale. I have checked out some of the information boards that are dotted around. This is part of the South Downs Way, or South Downs National Park. What I've used as my starting point was a Cicerone guidebook, which is a guide to walks in South Downs National Park, and it contains 40 of them, spanning the length of the whole South Downs Way, which is basically 100 miles. Takes about a week or 9 days, some people say, to walk it end to end. That's something I'd like to do. I haven't done that, but you never know. I apologise if the breeze is creating a bit of noise around around the microphone. It's been quite a breezy day, but just such a bright, sunny, warm day. It's been lovely. But it's getting to that point now where the temperature, thankfully, is just dropping a little bit. I'm trying to get a bit of shelter here, actually, so that it doesn't make too much of a noise around the microphones. Anyway, so it hasn't quite gone to plan, but, you know, I kind of got to that point where I was starting to feel a little bit a little bit miffed, thinking, oh, you know, I should have been able to do it, and I didn't have the chance. And so I thought, okay, well, grr, and such. Or words to that effect, shall we say. But thinking about it, I have actually achieved quite a lot today. I've shot, where are we? Probably about 70 pictures, something like that, along the way. Some of them are repetitions, but it's given me a good head start. There was some information boards along the way as well, which just spoke about the history and the some things that are going on. That's the whole point of this trip, is to get some information as a starting point. And I thought what I'd do, I'd take the Cicerone book as a starting point. I'm not going to duplicate the walk or anything like that and sort of try to sort of palm it off on as my own or anything like that. I just wanted to have, rather than get the Ordnance Survey map and just say, right, I'm going from here to here, which I could have done, and that's fine. I do actually have one in my bag. I thought, okay, I will take this route that this person has suggested, because when I looked at the information, it actually had some good information about some of the things that you will encounter along the way, some of the points of reference, like some memorials and views and this sort of thing, which is all important for the articles that I want to write. I don't know exactly what the articles are. They are to do with the outdoors, of course. Some might be to do with photography, some might be to do with family and enjoying the outdoors and all this sort of thing. So I've sort of gone into this with a completely open mind, which of course is the way I like to do it. But using that book as a starting point is pretty good. Fairly clear in the way it's written, the walk. I think it's one of those things when you're following instructions, written instructions, you kind of foreshorten the length between sort of instructions. It wasn't a bullet point, it was a case of, I'll go along here and then you'll see this, and at this point you go across here and a short way forward you'll see this. And your mind, I think, wants to kind of connect the dots, and you kind of start, if you don't immediately see those dots, you kind of think, well, am I going the right way? And of course, when you're on a 6.5 mile route, you want to make sure that that you're not going the wrong way. So for example, I'm stood at a point now where I was earlier, and I remember thinking to myself, which way do I go? Do I go through here? Do I go through here? There? And actually, I've come back to that that same point, and I can see exactly where I was and what have you. So, because I'm basically just out on my own walking, it's a really warm day, I've got plenty of water. I've actually got the main bit of kit is the rucksack I have. It is a Lowpro Rover Pro 45 litre AW bag, backpack, and a lot of you will have heard me talk about this a lot in the podcast or in Facebook statuses and all this sort of thing. This, I have decided, I've had it for a while, this today is going to be, I think, the last outing for it before I actually write up the review. So by the time this goes live, I don't know if I will have got it written up by then. I might, but we shall see. So in that, strapped to the outside, I have a lightweight tripod. It's the Manfrotto Compact, I forget what they call it now, photo movie kit or something or other. It's got like a pistol grip and it's very lightweight. There is a review that I did of that some time ago, and of course I'll link to that in the show notes. But that's kind of, you know, it's a good little tripod. I am using it today, or have been using it, with the D800 because it's a lightweight camera, but with all the resolution and technical ability that you would expect. I've taken the battery grip off it because I'm not shooting portraits, I'm not shooting fast-moving action. Not that it's brilliant for fast-moving action. I'm just going to sit down for a second, actually. Oh, that's good. So I have got that with just one lens. And that one lens is the Nikon AFS Nikkor 35mm f1.8. Now, just to put a caveat on that, I know a lot of you who know a lot more about lenses and the technical and all this geek speak than I do. I know that that is a DX format lens and the D800 is an FX format lens. The badges are on there to tell me. I originally had planned to bring my 50mm 1.8, which doesn't have any vignetting. It's a really nice lens. But I have lent that along with a polarizing filter, which I was really hoping to bring with me as well. Perfect timing, eh? And so I thought, okay, well, I'll take the 35mm. I know I get the vignetting, but I've been shooting in such a way that actually I can crop out the vignette, but it gives me, in the instant, the first instance, it gives me a wider angle of view. Now, yes, I do know that built into the D800 there is an auto crop feature. Let's start walking again, I think. There is that crop there, but do you know, for the amount of vignetting that I get, and it is kind of worse the further you go down the aperture scale to f11, 16, all that sort of thing. For all of that, I would rather shoot with it and crop it out. Now, with some shots, I don't have to do, or won't have to crop it. I can have the full image, but then I will just fill in, for example, with the sky, I'll just clone in some of the sky to go over that vignette area. I really don't mind that. It's not as if it's cheating the viewer, shall we say. It's not as though these have to be factually correct to the, you know, utmost degree. I'm just going to go take shelter just for a second. That wind's got up. I've actually stood by a little information hut, which is here. And in fact, do you know what? Let's just go in here. I could probably give you a bit of information about Kingly Vale just while I'm here. And you can hear it. Ooh, it's kind of hollow. The story of Kingly Vale it's got here. And it's kind of a wooden building with, I think these must be glass windows. Yeah, glass windows there. So as they say here, I won't go through all the panels because there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 panels really big with illustrations. Story begins over 12,000 years ago, da-da-da-da-da. The wildwood, as it was called, was probably a mixture of woodlands, scrub and grasslands with deer, wild horses and large prehistoric cows called aurochs wandering around. And then it goes on to talk about how iron replaces bronze. And I can see the burial mounds here. Now somewhere it's going to tell me about those. That would be good if I could tell you about that. Oh no, that's ramparts. I won't waste a lot of time here, but then it goes into talking about, I mean, there's aeroplanes, Spitfires and things from the war, so that obviously, as I record this, it's within a few days, it's around the time that it's just been the 70th anniversary of D-Day. So, you know, this area was important around that time. It was used, I'm just reading here, in the 40s, the Vale was used as a firing range by Canadian and British troops training for D-Day and was regularly visited by Spitfires from neighbouring airfields carrying out strafing exercises. I did not know that. I haven't actually stopped and read all of these panels. I took some quick shots of each panel just for my research. But all these bits of information are like gold dust for me. Because, you know, I might think, for example, and just make a way out now. For example, I might think, oh, okay, I fancy just looking into this with the history of sort of with the war and the plains and Kingly Vale and what went on here. And just off the back of that, I've got the phone number of powers that be that sort of manage and maintain this area. And there's all this information. And I might think to myself, well, do you know what? I'm going to write for a completely new market. Maybe, I don't know, sort of aircraft history or... you know, that you name a topic and there's bound to be a magazine for it. We'll just go through what they call a kissing gate. I have a sign here, public footpath, West Stoke Car Park, 3/4 of a mile. So that is how far I've got to walk, essentially for the starting point. And it's really exposed here, so I do apologise if the wind is beating around quite a bit. I'll try to shield this. I've actually been thinking, when I use my little tie clip microphone, I tend to use just a little bit of like fake fur, that sort of stuff, just to act as a wind blocker. And I never did get round to doing it for the main... my recorder, because the microphones are just on the top there. But the more I'm out and about now doing these trips, I think I'm going to have to do that, because it's only right for you guys so that you get nice clear audio. Anyway, for today I don't have it, so we'll just make do. So let's just talk about KISS again, because I know a lot of you like that sort of thing. So I've got my D800 with a 35mm lens. On the bottom of the camera is a quick release plate, which just makes it so much quicker and easier to load the camera onto the tripod rather than screwing it on each time. A lot of you, I'm sure, have those features on your tripods. If you are looking for a tripod for the outdoors, or for any shooting environment for that matter, I would encourage you to follow the link in the show notes to the buyer's guide that I wrote for Wex Photographic a few weeks ago, and that will just break down the various types of tripod, the different materials, whether it's metal, aluminium, carbon fibre, and the types of heads, what you might use them for, and so forth. Anyway, D800 tripod, 35mm lens in the bag. My other most important bit of kit today is water, because, you know, it's no good being out on the hill all day if you then start to get headaches, migraines, and all that sort of thing. So I have brought a water vessel. What's the word? Oh, my mind's gone absolutely blank. It must be the heat. Basically, you guys are familiar with probably the likes of Camelback and Platypus. They're basically hydration pouches. And they have a tube coming off them, and you put them in your bag, and the tube comes up over your shoulder, clips onto your rucksack strap, and it's basically got a valve on it so that you can just bite down on the valve, suck, and the water or squash or whatever drink you're drinking, maybe something a little bit stronger, will come flowing through, so you don't actually have to worry about taking your backpack off all the time and all the rest of it. It's a brilliant device. It's been going for some time now. Some people call it a bladder. So I've got one which originally came from a Camelback bag, and I've got the old bag somewhere. But the LowPro rucksack that I'm using, the backpack here, actually has a pouch for that on the outside, which is really good, because so many of these backpacks, they say, oh yes, it's all set up for hydration packs, but you have to put the hydration pack on the inside, and usually that involves having sort of a big pocket that sits directly behind your back, behind the frame or the back panel of the backpack. And that always makes me a bit nervous when I've got pounds and pounds worth of equipment in there. But this is on the outside, so it's kind of okay. Also in there, I've got... what have I got? I've got a pouch that one of the pouches for camera equipment that comes with this backpack. The other one's a bit bigger and I didn't need it today. So originally in that I had the camera and lens. Also a little pouch with the audio recorder that I'm using at the moment. Spare batteries. I've got a little handheld small video recorder. I'm still using the Kodak PlaySport ZX5. People don't seem to think the quality is that bad, actually. And for me, it's ideal because it's shockproof, waterproof to a point, dustproof and all that sort of thing. It's perfect for the outdoors. So, let me just see if I can get a bit of shelter for a second. That's really kicked up again. There we go. So yes, I've got that, which is pretty good. What else? I always take my tarp with me for shelter. Not that I'm expecting to need shelter, certainly not today where it's such a lovely hot sunny day. But remember, shelter can be used when the weather is beautiful. If you want to just get out of the wind, which actually wouldn't be a bad idea at the moment. Or if you want to block the sun a little bit so that you can sit and have your lunch or what have you. What else have I got in there? I've got a little blow up seat. I've got a long sleeve top, which is actually sorry, I'm just going to have to pause here because there are other people coming. Bear with me. Sorry about that. So I've got a long sleeve top, which is actually made out of bamboo, of all things. I'm sure a lot of you have come across these companies that use different materials like bamboo. It's super, super soft. It's lovely. I was actually given it, not for review or anything. It was, let me think. It was going back a while. I did a shoot for a company. I know I wrote about it and I'll link in the show notes. A company that they wanted some product shots for the ISPO Munich trade show. And whilst we were talking, they had some old stock. And he said, do you know what? Do you want this? And he gave me a couple of these. And, you know, really nice close fit, but not too close. Haven't needed it today, but I just didn't want to bring a fleece or a big coat or anything. I didn't need that today. What I do have in terms of my clothes today, I've got some high-tech walking boots which are coming to the end of their sort of test review period for me to write up about those. Pair of shorts, nothing special there. I also have a merino wool, you could call it base layer. I'm just using it as a standalone t-shirt today. That's actually from Mountain Warehouse, which is one of the UK's largest high street retailers. It's really nice, actually. It's kept me warm in the winter months and it's keeping me nice and cool, because wool is very good as well as keeping you warm, as helping you to stay cool. Again, there'll be a review. I've got a lot of writing to do. There'll be a review coming up of that before long. What else in the bag? Not a lot. Some lunch, some bits and pieces like headache pills. Got a torch in there just in case I got stuck and, you know, needed to signal or anything like that. We'll tell you something rather good in a minute. An app that I'm using, or have been using. I'm just about to see someone else coming through, and coincidentally I also need to tie up my bootlace. So I will pause there and I'll be right back to you. So yes, I will tell you about this little app, which is free, and it is produced by Ordnance Survey, and it is called Ordnance Survey OS Locate, and it's brilliant. This is the first time I've really been trialing it. I've sort of played around with it a bit. Basically, it's got a compass in there, And obviously you have your phone and you kind of point in the direction that you're going and what have you. And then, as I am at the moment, and so for example, I'm sort of heading back towards, in a southerly direction, back to the car park, and it's got the six-figure grid reference of where you are. And so the easting is 823 and the northing is 092 where I stand. But the reason I use this, and you can sort of, I've also got their map finder, what do you call it, plug-in or sort of bolt-on software as well. It's got a separate compass as well and what have you. But it has a share button, which then allows you to send an email, a text message, a Facebook update, or a Twitter message. And so, for example, if I click messages now, it says, and you can adjust what it does say, I am here, SU823092, sent by OS Locate app. And then you fill in the to field in the message, this is for a text, you pick out a phone number from your contacts, and it sends a message, assuming you've got the signal to do that. It doesn't actually use the location settings to for it to be able to find out where exactly you are. But assuming you've got the signal to send a text, it basically is brilliant. And the reason I use it is, you know, this is fairly tame here. This isn't like going up in the Alps or heading off to Everest base camp or anything dramatic like that. But just suppose I slipped and, God forbid, broke my leg, okay? And there's no way that I was going to get down to the bottom of Kingly Vale and hobble my way along this path back to the car. And then how would I drive the car? You should always be thinking about safety, no matter how mundane a walk like this would be. So, for example, I've said to my wife, right, I'm going out for the day. I expect to be back by a certain time, and I'll keep you in touch all along the way. Now, of course, I could send text messages, which is fine, or whatever messages, just to say, hi, I'm okay, still walking, whatever. But for me to be able to say, I'm okay, I've just got to this point and I'm stopping for lunch, here is the grid reference, I think that's brilliant. I really, really do think that's brilliant. And I think Ordnance Survey should be commended on releasing an app like that that is so useful and actually so important, especially making it free. I mean, why wouldn't you, really? However, well done, guys. I think that's brilliant. So that's on my phone. What else? I think that's pretty much it. I got a couple of walking poles, not that I really needed them today. I generally don't use walking poles. They are mainly there for if I had wanted to set up a tarp to create a bit of shade out from the sun, or if the wind picked up or anything like that. I would just use those with the tarp just to create a shelter. There we go. So, can't immediately... I know, as soon as I finish talking, there will be something else I forgot to tell you about. The photography side of things, of course, you know, I've been using my audio recorder to take audio notes as I'm walking along. So, for example, where I am here, on the way up here, I saw some hunting birds. I think they were probably like kestrels or kites flying around. So I just said, you start through this gate and you walk along here and over the farmer's field, the birds doing this and da 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 da. And when I was going up the paths, I was saying about the describing what I saw and all the rest of it. The pictures, I've just been taking shots as I've gone along, just for reference material, taking pictures, as I say, things like information boards, things that I could kind of immediately think would be reference points. Again, don't know how that's all going to fit in, really, as yet, because I'm keeping a completely open mind. So now I have to think about how I'm going to finish my trip. In the coming weeks, I want to get it done sooner rather than later, really. I've now got to think about the other two-thirds of the route, which is going up over the top of Kingly Vale, down past a place called Bow Hill, down into a little village called Stoughton, and the route then sort of continues around. For example, there is, I know in Stoughton there is a church there that dates back to 1050, I think, something like that. So again, I'm interested just to see that. I'm not anticipating, oh, bear with me, I'm just going to put this on pause again. Sorry about that, just some more people. Those of you who don't know, if I see people walking towards me, they often want to engage in conversation, and I don't think it's right to record their conversation without them knowing, so that's why I pause. So the church at Stoughton. I'm not especially thinking that I'm going to be writing for religious magazines or anything like that, but just as a local history, as an outdoors, as a point of reference along a route, you never know what might appear, you know, what might be of interest. So I'm going to do that. I know there's a pub there, which is always good, because as a lot of you outdoors sorts will no doubt agree, the best way to do a walk is to ensure that there is a pub along the route. I know people that actually go on walks specifically joining the dots pub to pub. if that's your bag, that's great. Anyway, here we go then. I am back to the car park at West Stoke, and I think that's a pretty much a good time to end this recording. So I hope that's not been too much of a waffle for you. It's kind of one of those days where not really shooting, it's not a shoot, it's a research day. Hasn't gone to plan, however, off the back of that, I've made a really good start. I've got reference pictures, I've got reference audio, I've got some thoughts together. And yeah, it's been actually a really productive day, I think. So I'm going to get back to the car, head back, and that will be the end of a productive day, which started off a little bit frustrating, but actually it turned out all right. So for now, I will leave it there. I mentioned there a forthcoming test review of a LowPro backpack. Now, this will be coming up later in the week, but in the meantime, you can take a look at the overview video that I shot in the test review section of the website. You can check out all the show notes to this and other week's shows at theactivephotographer.com. If you'd like to get in touch directly, don't forget I'm on Twitter, at Giles Babbage. There's the Facebook page, facebook.com/theactivephotographer. Or, of course, send me a good old-fashioned email, giles@theactivephotographer.com. So thanks for listening, everyone. Take care, have a great week, and I will speak to you all very soon.
Member of the CurrentPhotographer.com podcast network. Find more great photography shows at CurrentPhotographer.com/podcast.